Welcome to We'll Build a Land, the radio magazine on faith, community, and democracy. I'm your host, David Aragon. In this edition, we'll look at the role the faith community is playing in the peace movement.
I think the words collateral damage are obscene. It refers to human beings.
Beyond talking about what religious organizations are doing officially, we'll hear from individual people of faith about what actions they're taking and why. And we'll bring you an interview with Susan Mark Landis of the Mennonite Church USA, a traditional pacifist faith ready to take on high-tech militarism.
Martin Luther King said it's not enough to say we must not wage war. It's necessary to love peace and sacrifice for it. We must concentrate not on the eradication of war, but on the affirmation of peace.
The first massive action against war with Iraq was in October 2002, when several tens of thousands marched in Washington and San Francisco. We talked to some of those attending the San Francisco event.
I'm Webb Mealy.
And are you from here?
I'm from Oakland.
You're a Christian?
Yes, that's true.
What do you feel about your faith is bringing you here today?
Well, I personally believe that I go along with Martin Luther King Jr. that says that his government was the number one source of violence in the world. I think that's true now. And I'm taking Jesus at his word. It says that what marks people out as the children of God is not what you believe, but what you do and what you work for.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You are a Quaker?
Yes.
And so you're here today following a pacifist tradition.
That's correct.
Is there something about this particular war and these particular times that especially calls for a response, or would you be here for any conflict anywhere?
Well, I would try to be here for conflicts anywhere, but I think this is such a serious threat to the stability of and any progress and peace in the world that it's just essential that people that believe in peace be here to say no.
There are other issues people are raising here today besides the militarism per se. Are there other things that have brought you here now?
Oh, it's militarism. It's a disregard for human life in other countries. I think the words collateral damage are obscene. It refers to human beings. And corporate interest involved in this war, the greed for oil and the greed for power and dominance of this country, it makes me ashamed. I love this country, and it makes me ashamed that a country that's been blessed with such natural resources and has such a high standard of living is not trying to cooperate with the rest of the world to make the world a better place for everyone in the world.
You're wearing a t-shirt that says that you're a Unitarian.
Yes.
In what way do your values bring you here today?
Unitarian Universalists believe in some important principles that unite our congregations. One of the principles is the creation of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And that so concern about the world, concern about strengthening the United Nations and international process has been a Unitarian Universalist value for a long, long time for many, many of our members. We don't hold all of our members to think the same way, but there's a strong consensus that we should use war only as a last resort, and of course some Unitarian Universalists would say to never use war. I'm the minister out at Mission Peak Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Fremont.
Can we use your name?
Sure, it's Chris Schreiner, Reverend Chris Schreiner.
A few weeks after we taped those conversations on the street, we came across Webb Mealy's name in the newspaper. Looking for a way to hang a freeway overpass banner that couldn't come loose and fall into traffic, Mr. Mealy brought a projector and a laptop, and commuters on Interstate 580 saw his anti-war message in PowerPoint. If the faith community has so far been a small presence at these highly visible public events, it may partly be a matter of timing. The organizers of the largest demonstrations, in October and January, have been political groups already working against economic sanctions in Iraq, groups that were well-positioned and are experienced with events like marches and rallies. But to the extent that organized religion has a respected voice on moral issues, it has raised that voice at the official level. Statements opposing war on Iraq have come not only from traditional peace churches like the Quakers, but also from the Methodist, Presbyterian, Congregationalist, Lutheran, and Episcopal churches, the Unitarian Universalist Association, and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Many of these official statements refer to the Christian doctrine of just war. This standard requires that war be a last resort in response to an attack, that it be declared by a legitimate authority, and that the innocent in the enemy's country be protected. Plans for a so-called preemptive war on Iraq have been criticized on all of these grounds. But official statements aimed at leaders assume those leaders are willing to listen. Does it help if they belong to the religious body that's raising the concern? Evidently not in this case. George W. Bush and Dick Cheney both belong to the United Methodist Church, which has called on them in several public statements and an unknown number of more private communications. In December, Methodist officials told Pacifica Radio's Amy Goodman that they had waited 10 months so far, with no reply from their two highest-profile members. Maybe the leaders are not the only people who need to hear the message. Roman Catholic Bishop Thomas Gumbleton says the clergy should be educating their own congregants about the war, inviting the people to lead so the leaders will follow. Attendance at houses of worship, however, has fallen back to the same levels as before the September 11th attacks. The shock of those events has worn off, even if the need for moral steadiness to cope with the crisis is still there. So some faith groups have looked for other ways to reach people and to reach them across traditional lines. One vehicle they're using, a full-page newspaper ad. Such ads were credited with helping build a consensus against the Vietnam War, and they're starting to be seen again, placed by activist groups such as MoveOn.org, Americans Against War with Iraq, and increasingly now, by faith groups. Reverend Brian Jessup is a minister in Fresno, California, who, with other Fresno religious leaders, published a full-page prayer for peace in the largest paper in that city of 500,000. They timed their message to coincide with the holiday season, hoping to make peace on earth more than just a traditional platitude. We spoke to Reverend Jessup just before the ad ran in December.
We gathered a group of people who we thought might be interested from our various organizations to do a prayer for peace in the holiday season. So we got together and crafted a prayer to actually go into the Fresno Bee as a paid, full-color, full-page production on the back of the Faith and Values section of the Bee on December 21st. It was a prayer by committee, so we had some African-American gospel kind of influence and some Armenian Orthodox influence and some Disciples of Christ influence and some Unitarian Universalist influence in the actual drafting. And then we had some editing from the Islamic community. And the content of the prayer actually begins with a quote from Dwight Eisenhower and goes from there. And just ask that in this season of peace, we remember that we're all part of a marvelous mystery of creation and valued in that process, and that we need to be listening to one another. And that particularly in times like our times now, we want to not glorify violence, really urge our leaders to build world community and to think about the health and welfare of the planet, and understanding that there are dangers in the world. We in this country, if we set boundaries for other nations, we'll hold ourselves to those same boundaries. So that's kind of the gist of where the prayer goes. And we have over 100 people signing the prayer. So we have Buddhists and humanists and Unitarian Universalists and Christians from various houses and Sikhs and Jews and Muslims and just a whole variety of folks.
Jessup sees messages like the peace prayer as reminding people of values they already hold in the face of other messages that are almost deliberately confusing and cynical.
I think that there's a manufactured there's a manufactured kind of propagandistic element to the worldview that we in America are being sold through corporate media. And I think that people of faith need to remember the heartbeat of mothers and children. They need to remember that people need to be clothed and housed, and they need to ask questions about what's really dangerous. What is really dangerous for families on the face of the earth? And you know, so we have tremendous scare tactics around smallpox. Meanwhile, AIDS runs rampant in South Africa and struggling with it still here in the United States. So we choose to spend mega million dollars on diseases that might happen, and we ignore diseases that are killing us right now. If one were to step back from that and look at it objectively, one would say, well, geez, this is really mentally ill.
Meanwhile, the faiths with the longest peace traditions have turned to concrete action. The American Friends Service Committee, a Quaker group famous for its humanitarian work in Vietnam, is now a co-organizer of many public vigils and witnesses. And the Mennonites are politely but insistingly mobilizing in the heartland. Susan Mark Landis, a Mennonite social justice organizer, spoke to us by phone from Central Ohio. Susan Mark Landis, you're the peace advocate for the Mennonite Church USA. Tell us what the Mennonites are doing to prepare for a war in Iraq.
We're still preparing for peace. We're still praying and acting and hoping that there will be peace. One thing we're working with right now is called the January Peace Splits, and that's 10 actions for peace that will take about a total of 5 hours. And these are all things, again, to bring to the national understanding that there is a huge grassroots effort against invading Iraq. We are, of course, attacking them constantly, so we don't use that term. This includes letters to the editors of local newspapers and our national newspapers, letters and phone contacts to legislators, and then letters and phone contacts to President Bush and other people in his administration, especially before January 27, when Hans Blix reports to the United Nations Security Council on his findings, and before the Presidential State of the Union address. We think those are things that make an enormous difference. And again, the purpose is just to let the public know that there are alternatives and that there are many people in favor of trying alternative answers to the situation.
One of the suggestions on the Mennonite website for the day that sometimes these things creep up on you, but if you can define a day that the war starts, is what you call the work Sabbath. Would you like to talk about that?
What we're encouraging people to do is to plan ahead in case of war and realize that if the United States attacks another country, this is not a normal work day. It's a day that needs to be treated totally differently. And so we're encouraging people to plan so that if there would be an attack during their work day, they take an hour or two off of work and they spend that time praying publicly, again, so that the nation knows there are those who are opposed to the action, and also using that time to contact their senators and representatives and the president, reiterating their opposition to what is going on. We're encouraging them to realize that it's not just a normal day, and that by sacrificing either income or the goodwill of their coworkers, they're bringing this to the nation's attention. I guess in a sense it's an economic way of saying this is not the way we want our country to work, but it's also asking for time for prayer and saying this is an unusual circumstance and I don't agree with it. By letting people know ahead of time that this is going to happen. I mean, I can't imagine if there were, you know, thousands of people who would decide to take 2 hours off work, what that might do to a car manufacturing plant or other businesses that are owned specifically by Mennonites or by people who claim to be pacifists. If something like that would slow down considerably, I would hope that the local community would take notice that the country can't continue as normal, because we've made a decision that is putting other people terribly at risk, and we're willing to take some risk and sacrifice a bit ourselves.
So if people want to do this together, do you have any suggestions for how they can hook up with each other?
We do have a place that you can register on our website, and if somebody would ask me, I can go through the website and see which people are registered and in what localities they are. Often people who are willing to take those kind of steps know each other in a community and are aware of it. I think another thing that could be done is that these people could take an ad out in their local newspaper to help them find each other, and again, to provide the alternate voice before the war, hoping that if enough people are willing to take that step and the community, the whole community will say, this is nuts. Let's find a different alternative so we don't have to go through that.
Now, Mennonites have also tried to take their concerns to the White House directly, haven't they? You were in Washington with an interfaith group in September, is that right?
Right. I was there September 11 also, which of course was an awesome opportunity. But September 12, James Schrag, who's our executive director of Mennonite Church USA, was able to address a news conference that was covered by NPR, CNN. He was one of several speakers who spoke out against possible war. If you remember, this was the same day that President Bush addressed the United Nations, asking that a new resolution be passed. So we were able, James Schrag and I and J. Darrell Byler, who is the executive director of our Mennonite Central Committee Washington office, we tried to take these signatures and petition into the White House.
Tried to.
Because of anthrax scares, it's very hard to take anything into the White House. Also, we were working with Benjamin Miller, who is on the National Security Council side of the White House. He reports to the Mideast desk, who reports to Condoleezza Rice. And they said that that side of the House does not deal with domestic issues like petitions. And so we weren't able to take it in. And I'm not sure we ever were able to get it delivered.
Do you get discouraged? I mean, you take a petition to the White House and they won't accept it. And you look at the press and the TV, and it all seems like they're kind of taking the war for granted. Doesn't that make you wonder how things like letters to the editor are going to help? I mean, how do you maintain your faith that what you do can make a difference?
Right. I think I'm faith-based. I'm Christian, and I hope and I try to bring out the best in every person, and that would include the press, a good press. Which we often
is one
to
of
have
our
United States. Good press wants to hear both sides. Our aim is to provide the other side. I think apathy, our biggest downfalls, because when we're apathetic, when we think we can't make any difference, when that inaction paralyzes us, I think that's the point at which we're the most guilty of hiding. Well, Mennonites would say our light under a bushel. We have an alternative voice. We believe that God has given us a different way to live. And by not sharing that alternative, in this case being something other than killing people to seek revenge, something other than meeting violence with violence, which tends to escalate in a never-ending spiral, when we hide that ideal, when we hide that vision that God has given us, we're guilty of a great, very great, I guess we could go so far as to say sin. So the hope may be long-term. The hope may be enormously long-term. And we have to look at this in the sense that sometimes it takes a very long time to get things changed. When we look at the slave issues, when we look at the civil rights issues here in our country, how women eventually got the vote, those were changes that took an extremely long time. But a great deal of nonviolent social action made an enormous difference. So we have to have the courage, we have to have the strength to continue over and over again, being willing to do the difficult thing and to maintain that hope as we can. Martin Luther King said, it's not enough to say we must not wage war. It's necessary to love peace and sacrifice for it. We must concentrate not on the eradication of war, but on the affirmation of peace. And so it's by making that alternative vision available to people around us that we can hope to encourage a change in thought. And it may take generations, continued generations, because of course people have been working against violence and against war forever. But each person that has a new vision has a new reason for hope and a new reason for living.
It's fashionable to say that everything is different now. Is everything different now? I mean, since September 11th, does it change what you're doing? Is everything different?
A lot of people contacted Mennonites and other pacifists after September 11 and said, this has changed the world, right? This has changed your willingness to be a pacifist, right? And many of us were really surprised by the reaction, because September 11 showed us how horrible violence is. Most of us have not experienced violence firsthand on our own soil here in the United States, but when we did, when we saw the destruction and what this does to families and friends and the horrible things it did to our infrastructure when a building that was that important to our economics was destroyed. To me, it said again that we shouldn't be willing to put anybody through this.
All right. The Mennonites are one of the, what they call the three historic peace churches, right, along with the Quakers and the Church of the Brethren. But as a Christian, you've probably also run across the so-called end times argument that says that a degree of violence and even a conflagration in the Mideast is foretold in the Bible. And there are people that would say, in that case, why not go ahead and bring it on? That argument is out there in the world. What do you say to it?
I interpret Revelation, the book, the Bible book of Revelation, which speaks of the end times, I interpret that much differently than people who look at it that way. I think most of the prophecy that John foretold probably took place within the next generation of the people who were living in the Roman Empire, the destruction of the temple. Those were some of the things that were foretold. So I don't use that as an end times book in the same way that people who prophesy end times do. The first coming of Jesus was so unexpected, was so different than what people thought they read as prophecy in the Old Testament, that many were unable to recognize Jesus for being the Son of God. And in the same way, I imagine that we won't understand the second coming of Jesus or the end times. At any rate, I don't think that governments can bring about the end of the world. I think that is something that only God knows about and God controls. But that's not a part of my theology very much, to think about bringing about violence as part of the end of the world.
Okay, so let's assume if the United States does launch an invasion and we don't want it to be the end of the world. So returning to the idea of contingency plans, suppose we turn on the radio and we find out we're at war. What do you suppose people, Mennonites and others as well, can do starting at that point?
That evening, we hope that a lot of congregations will turn to prayer and then to action. Mennonites have very often helped to rebuild after wars. We've been known for that in Europe, in Vietnam, in Laos, in Afghanistan now, and eventually I suppose we will be in Iraq, should that be necessary. And as I said, we're already in Iraq trying to help alleviate some of the suffering. We also are often called to help people who are in the military, who have discovered that their conscience does not allow them to do the things the military is asking them to do. And so we're often helping people think through what God has called them to do and whether they can be a part of military operations that they find themselves in the midst of for whatever reason.
Are you able to help people who may not be conscientious objectors to all wars, or in the classic example, who would have fought Hitler, but who don't want to fight in a war that isn't primarily defensive or in some other way or so selectively objecting? Can somebody contact you who's, as you say, trying to work it through?
Oh, yes, because there are secular groups that are able to help if we're not able to. I would not be the primary person working on that, but the law itself is very is very different for different situations, and there would be help for people. There's an 800 number that we can post on the website for people who are trying to think through their position. And often, as people are caught in the turmoil of doing violence, ideas come to them that hadn't before. And there are a lot of veterans who are in the Mennonite Church as pacifists, because once they've been involved in war, they realize that this is not the way they want to help the world solve problems. And so there's a whole thinking process people need to go through. And we're glad to help with that, yeah.
But you're still hoping it doesn't come to that. Do you think your efforts have had an impact?
Mm-hmm. We honestly think that the vote in October and the need to go to the United Nations and the sending of the inspectors to Iraq, we honestly think that that slowed down considerably the United States administration's march toward war. We think that that was grassroots and then international pressure. And so we're hoping if we keep that up that we would be able to continue encouraging the United States to slow down.
All right, then. Susan Mark Landis, you're the peace advocate for the Mennonite Church USA, and you have a website, peace.menolink.org, that describes actions such as you've talked about here. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're very welcome. I was delighted to be able to speak to you today.
We asked people of other faiths to comment on the Mennonite suggestion for a work Sabbath to mark the day war breaks out. They hadn't yet heard about that proposal, but many did have plans for an immediate response to an invasion. The Reverend Dr. John Barons of First Parish in Needham, Massachusetts, says clergy in the Boston area have agreed on a vigil at the federal building there at 5 p.m. on the day of an attack. A look at the UnitedForPeace.org website shows many similar day-after events being planned for federal buildings across the country, and yes, some of those events include work stoppages. The weekend of February 15th and 16th will see anti-war protests in major cities worldwide. Most of the demonstrations will be on the 15th, but in San Francisco, the downtown rally will be on Sunday the 16th. With this date change, made originally in deference to the Chinese New Year, congregations that meet on Sunday are changing their own schedules to create faith-based contingents in the march. At the First Unitarian Church of Oakland, the Reverend Kathy Huff will lead her parishioners to the march on BART, which for this day has been dubbed the Peace Train. At San Francisco Civic Center, an interreligious service will be held from 11 a.m. to noon. The Friends Center, a block off the line of march, will be open for rest and reflection. And the San Francisco Mosque at Jones and Market will be open and inviting marchers to sign up as honorary members. Many are expected to do so in response to John Ashcroft's efforts to collect membership lists from these houses of worship. But the faith community is nevertheless still finding its place in an anti-war movement led by mainly political organizations. These groups have agendas that coexist sometimes uneasily, perhaps an inevitable result of the great breadth of opposition to the war. If the anti-war movement is not to splinter along ideological lines, it may need a spiritual as well as a political dimension. It's happened before, when the civil rights and anti-Vietnam War movements were united by Dr. Martin Luther King. As a Christian clergyman who honored Jews, Muslims, humanists, and atheists, while following the teachings of the Hindu Mahatma Gandhi, Dr. King joined these struggles for justice not as a strategy to build a larger movement, but as a vision to build a better land. We'll close this program with the words of Dr. King's speech at the Riverside Church, read on his birthday this year at a vigil organized by the People's Nonviolent Response Coalition.
They were led by Ho Chi Minh. Even though they quoted the American Declaration of Independence in their own document of freedom, we refuse to recognize them.
We are adding cynicism to the process of death, for they must know after a short period that none of the things we claim to be fighting for are really involved.
All the while the people read our leaflets and received the regular promises of peace and democracy.
Perhaps only his sense of humor and of irony can save him when he hears the most powerful nation of the world speaking of aggression as its troops
who came to help quell the insurgency that Diem's methods had aroused. When Diem was overthrown, they may have been
enemy. I am as deeply concerned about our own troops there as anything else. For it occurs to me that what we are submitting
this madness must cease. We must stop now. I speak as a child of God. I speak as one who loves America and to the leaders of our own nation. The great initiative in this war is ours. The initiative to stop it must be ours. This is the message of the great Buddhist leaders of Vietnam.
That's it for this edition of We'll Build a Land. We'd appreciate your comments on this program and suggestions for future ones. Maybe you know of someone who's setting an example the rest of us should hear about. Drop us a line. Our email is programming@uuradio.net. We'll Build a Land is an independent production. We're not affiliated with any religious or other organization. I'm David Aragon, your host and producer, and we had production assistance from Dana Smith Schuyler. Internet distribution thanks to the A-Infos Radio Project and RollYourOwnBlackout.com. Look for us on the web at uuradio.net. These are challenging times. Keep your spirits up, and thanks for listening.